This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
I told His Majesty as plainly as I could that the wrongdoers will be brought to justice and that the actions of those folks in Iraq do not represent the values of the United States of America. I told him I was sorry for the humiliation suffered by the Iraqi prisoners and the humiliation suffered by their families.
President Bush speaking Thursday alongside of King Abdullah of Jordan in the Rose Garden. Mr. Bush addressed the abuse of Iraqis at the Abu Ghraib prison outside of Baghdad. There have also been reports of prisoner abuse in Afghanistan this week. Our senior news analyst at NPR, Dan Shore, joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And, Dan, the president apologized to the readers of the Al-Haram newspaper in Egypt. He apologized to King Abdullah. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld apologized. General Richard Myers, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, apologized. Do all of these apologies succeed in blunting any of the impact of these pictures around the world?
Well, it depends where you mean. Certainly not in the Islamic world, where the effect of these pictures has been simply devastating because they've seen them. I think the current spirit among the Islamic people is symbolized by the Shiite firebrand, the Sheikh al-Sadr, in his mosque sermon yesterday, who said, "What sort of freedom and democracy can we expect from you Americans when you take such joy in torturing Iraqi prisoners?" In the United States, aside from what you might call general dismay about recognizing what American soldiers can sometimes do, the reaction of Americans seems not quite to have gelled as yet. There's a new Washington Post ABC poll that says that 60% to 48% that they still approve of President Bush's handling of the whole prisoner abuse issue, although 69 to 28% they say that this issue is a big deal because this kind of abuse is unacceptable.
Listening to the Secretary Rumsfeld's testimony yesterday and that of General Myers when they spoke to the Senate and House Armed Services Committee, what did you hear that amounted to a revelation?
Well, one thing I learned, I don't know if you'd call it a revelation, is that it was not the issue of prisoner abuse as such that finally got the Pentagon's attention. They had investigations in progress, quietly working their way up, nobody paying a whole lot of attention. Then came the pictures. It is not a crisis of prisoner abuse. It is a crisis of pictures and the effect that pictures can have. And so when these grisly pictures appeared on 60 Minutes 2 first and then all over the world, the administration knew that it had a five-alarm fire on its hands.
There have been calls for Secretary Rumsfeld to resign. President Bush says he will remain in the cabinet. Is that the kind of thing that someone will say before a resignation is offered?
Well, yes. They're going to say before a resignation or before no resignation. The point is that I think they haven't really quite made up their minds yet. At least the president hasn't. The cabinet member, Rumsfeld, serves at the president's pleasure. President has let it be known that he has a certain amount of displeasure and conveyed that to Secretary Rumsfeld, apparently not yet enough to drop him from the cabinet. Mm-hmm. Rumsfeld told Congress he'd quit in a minute if he thought he was being ineffective, but he wouldn't just quit to satisfy political appetites. Mm-hmm. Interesting, Bush on his campaign trip through in his bus in Iowa and Wisconsin pretty well stayed away from talking about the issue in public, although he telephoned Rumsfeld, mm-hmm. told him he did a good job in his testimony. I think this thing has to play itself out. I think one has to know where the Republicans in Congress end up before we will know. I would say it's an open question as to whether and when he leaves.
When the secretary says he won't quit just to satisfy political interests, part of what a cabinet officer has to do is satisfy political interests, isn't it? I mean, he has to sell budgets on Capitol Hill.
At the very least, he has to satisfy the members of Congress from your own party to whom you have to go all the time for money and support. And we don't yet know how congressional Republicans will come out because they're waiting to hear what their voters will tell them. Everybody is waiting for Lefty.
In Iraq, U.S.-led forces made a push this week to try and take on the forces of Shiite militia who are loyal to the cleric al-Sadr's militia. Now, they've been reluctant to directly engage this in the past because Shiites, of course, are majority in Iraq and in much of the Arab world. Why do you think this tactical change has been made?
I think that they're reaching a point of almost crisis in these negotiations in Iraq as you approach June 30th. Mm-hmm. And I think that all the parties concerned are very busy standing off, modifying positions, and looking for advantage when the great day comes. The basic problem is that the Shiites, long oppressed, with 60% of the population say, our time has come, and the Sunnis say, that can't be so.
President Bush is asking Congress for an additional $25 billion for operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. There was some surprise expressed this week that you would have to do this just a few months before the election. Is there any kind of battle in Congress that you see to withhold that money?
I don't think that in the end that they can withhold money that's called support of the troops. Nobody wants to not support the troops. Mm-hmm. But very funny thing, shortly before this request was made, for this additional money, Secretary Powell told the Black Caucus that there wasn't going to be any such request, which indicates how close Secretary Powell is to the action right now. It is a rather sensitive thing because Josh Bolton, the budget director, had said that additional requests during this whole fiscal year would be well below $50 billion, and if this money is added, it'll take it up to $112 billion.
Let's ask about events in Israel, where last Sunday Ariel Sharon's Likud party rejected his plan to relocate Israeli settlers and soldiers from out of the Gaza Strip. In doing so, it also, in a sense, rejects President Bush's endorsement of that plan.
Right.
What kind of impact does this vote have now in Israeli policy and U.S. policy?
Well, it's very interesting that it looks now as though Sharon's constituency is the White House. He doesn't have the support of his own party, but he has increasingly enthusiastic support from President Bush. And so he's going to go ahead, apparently, and evacuate the settlers from Gaza. The Bush administration is conducting a worldwide campaign in favor of this. They're saying this has one virtue. It's a way of restarting the stalled peace negotiations, or what they say, kickstart the roadmap, if I can get that all mixed up. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen anything like this in any setting before, where you go abroad for your support when you don't have sufficient support at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, does it suggest to you, knowing Israeli politics as you do, that the Sharon government is going to have to call for elections because they're under investigation for totally different reasons, domestic political reasons as well, allegations of scandal there?
That's right, but although most of the allegations of scandal have apparently not proved out. But it would appear that if you're going to go on a negotiating path with the United States that your own party doesn't support, you're really asking for pressure for a new election.
Mm-hmm. And of course, new elections, you wouldn't have to have any particular confidence now because there's a slender majority to begin with that the Likud party would prevail again.
That's right. The Likud party now is in a very strange position. The opposition, of course, is hardly being heard from on this, because they're waiting for the thing to be settled in the Likud.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dan Shore.
Sure.